So this is our last
session. And we'll take a break over the summer. I'm not sure, you know, if you're thinking about continuing on. Of course, we have the retreat coming up for those of you who are going to do that. And I think that'll be really exciting because it'll be people who have been working with TSK on this retreat, some from this program, some with other exposure to TSK, but it's going to be really nice to be working together as a group. And then we will start again in the fall, or there will be a program in the fall, and at the end of the talk today I'll say a little bit about what I have in mind, although I don't want to commit to it 100% because it's a long ways away and maybe I'll change my mind. But that's my plan at the moment. Or I will tell you something about my plan at the moment. Okay, so for today we are reading toward the end of the section on time and in dynamics. As you know, we are not reading the last chapter. So, you know, if you think that that's the part where it finally all becomes clear, then you know, by all means, go ahead and read it during the summer, or read it again, or work with it. And of course, there's the whole section. And it's maybe good to remind people that there's the whole section, the last part of the book, part four of the book, which is called what, Transformations, I think, something like that. Transformations is a kind of a second review of the themes, and this is where all the exercises are. So you can go back over the material that we've been working with and work with it in light of the exercises, and again, that would be a great thing to do during the summer, or just plain a great thing to do whenever you get to it. But we are working specifically with, the end of chapter 13 and the beginning of chapter 14. Now I want to go back to start with to a quote, something Rinpoche says actually before this reading. It was something in the reading from last week. And it's on page 122, about six lines from the bottom, and he's talking about time and how we don't really notice that time is an issue or that time could be different. He says, the course we follow flows so smoothly that we are not aware of making any choices at all. So time's not an issue for us. Of course, time is an issue in the sense of feeling pressured by time, being aware of death, the kinds of things that come up all the time. But it's not an issue in the sense that we don't imagine that time could be different. Those things all flow. They're all the consequences of our ordinary understanding of time. And we don't really even think about there being any other understanding of time available. And that is exactly the shift that we've been trying to make in this program. And you could say the same thing in general, I think, about the TSK vision. You know, there is a nice phrase that's used by a 20th century German philosopher, Husserl, who writes about the natural attitude. And what he means by the natural attitude is the attitude that takes everything for granted. That just figures this is the way things are. And in particular, with respect to consciousness or the mind or awareness, it never occurs to people who are living in the natural attitude that could be different. And the same thing is true then with respect to the basic structuring patterns like space and time. Husserl says, and I think really you could say TSK says, that the first step we need to make, the fundamental step, is to step out of the natural attitude, to step out of our usual understanding and realize that there are other possibilities. And we talked about that, I think, in the last program when we were talking about space. So waking up to other possibilities is really the key starting point here. And when we do, if we look at this quote that I just called attention to on page 122, that everything flows smoothly, what happens is that maybe things stop flowing quite so smoothly. And that perhaps sounds a little bit unfortunate because you want things to be smooth and flowing. But in this case, what it means, I think, is that you get a chance to see how things are put together. It's as though you were on a stage set, you know, like in a theater. And if you're sitting back in the audience, everything looks very realistic. But if you get up close and examine it, then you see that everything has just kind of been patched together, and none of it is real at all. And, I'm not trying to say that we should challenge the reality of what appears. In its own way, it's completely real and completely convincing. But in another way, or at another level, we can see how it's put together. And once we see how it's put together, once we see all the little maneuvers we have to make, then we have the opportunity for doing it differently. And there are a couple of ways of doing that, and in a way I'm trying to summarize at this point what it is about TSK that's special. You know? If you think about the temporal order and the momentum of that order, and we've talked about the momentum before and how it, you know, we get caught up in the momentum, we don't really have the possibility to do anything different. So one possibility, one way of dealing with that would be to slow the momentum down. And although this is a vast oversimplification, you might think of meditation as a way of slowing the momentum down. You ground in your experience, and gradually the agitation that's on the surface of experience settles down, and you find yourself more in the depths of experience. And that, of course, is a very wonderful way to do things. It takes a commitment. I mean, it's not that easy to do that. And I'm not saying necessarily TSK is easy, but it's different. It's completely different because although there are practices like that in TSK, because that would be one way to do it, there are other ways of working with the momentum. You can just break away. You can find a way to step out of the momentum. And in part, that's what's going on here, because you remember Rinpoche's, what he said at the beginning of chapter 13 was that he was going to tell a story which was a way of challenging the whole storytelling structure, or the whole way that time is conducted. And then he tells this story about conducting time. And the idea is that if you tell the story and see how the story gets put together, then you have the opportunity to step away from it. So what you recognize is that the story puts in place an order, a temporal order, as it gets described in this book. And I was struck on the reading this time that when we say temporal order, we're thinking of the time dimension. But of course, the word temporal in English has a couple of different levels of meaning, or it can mean two different things. One is related to time, but the other one has to do with the authorities, the ruling. But like the government, the powers that make things, that control what's going on in our ordinary lives. And when you talk about temporal in that sense, you're you're making a contrast between the temporal and the spiritual, or the temporal and the religious. There are those two orders. And that distinction is not the one we're interested in, but the idea that the temporal order is the one that empowers our ordinary understanding, and that sets up certain authorities whose authority we accept without questioning it. That, again, that's what we're trying to change. Let me stop there and see if there's anything people would like to say or ask. Okay, then we'll go on. So, Rinpoche brings up this very interesting point, which is that the time operates on two different levels. And he says, I think this is on 126, I didn't mark it quite right. He says, well, let's go to the bottom of 125. He says, in conducting the events that time presents, we conduct time as well. Each story we tell is also a story about the way that time functions. What he's saying and what he goes on to discuss is that we're doing two different things with regard to time. Time is what structures the temporal order, what structures the story, but time also shows up in the story. So there's a kind of a paradox there, or conflict. There's two things that aren't supposed to fit together. I mean, you've got time on one level and time on the other level, and how do you fit them together? There's an image he uses on page 129 about that. He says, and this is right at the top, the second line from the top. He says, time is the bridge across which we transport experience, right? The conductor can safely direct traffic across the bridge. As the on of what arises, time goes on in ways we can depend on. So time is what makes it possible for the story to even take shape. And then in the next sentence he asks, how can we reconcile this view with the notion that time itself is conducted? And he goes on to give a very interesting answer. I just wanted to suggest a couple of parallels to that. One is in the text, and I think it's a wonderful image he uses here. It's like if you're painting a picture, and in your picture there's a painting. And so what you do is you paint the canvas on which the picture appears. Now, I suppose you could actually literally do that, but I assume artists don't usually do that. In other words, you could paint a room, and in the room you could paint a blank canvas, and then you could paint something onto the canvas. But I suppose people don't bother to paint the blank canvas first. But it has that same sense. We're painting an image of time, but that image is part of a larger image, which is us doing the painting, and therefore which is also time. And so the question is, on the other example I wanted to give, just because it may help you think about that a little bit, is lucid dreaming. If you're in a dream and there are the events going on in the dream, but at the same time you are aware that it's a dream. It's something like that. We're operating on both levels at once. Or actually, an even simpler example that we're all familiar with is if you're reading a novel or seeing a movie, on the one hand, you're involved in the events of the novel or the movie, but at the same time, you're operating on a different level where you know that you're the one seeing the movie or you're the one reading the novel. So, the issue is to be able to move from the one level where we accept everything, where we just take time for granted, the natural attitude, as I've said, to this other level where we see time being constructed. And the question is, you know, how do we do that? And that's in TSK, that's really, in a sense, always the question. How do we move from our ordinary understanding, which doesn't question anything, or doesn't question the things that really matter, to an understanding where the basic structures of our experience are being called into question? So we have the first step, which is, if you look back at the first TSK book, he says this is the first level of time in the TSK sense, or of space, or knowledge, is when you realize that it's possible to do it differently. That's the first thing. And then the second step, of course, is to start doing it differently. And the problem, as always, is that we're really stuck. You know, we're stuck in the temporal order. We have our way of doing things. And it doesn't seem like there's any way to get outside it. Rinpoche says on page 127, I don't see the quote right now, but he basically, oh, here it is. It's right in the middle of the page. He says, human consciousness is bound to these interactive structures. We know only what appears in time and conforms to the temporal dynamic. So, first reaction is, we see the structure, but we also are stuck in it. There's no way outside it because our understanding conforms to time.
That is not helpful.
And then we come to the quote that we talked about last week already, where Rinpoche says, no, no, it is possible to do something about this. And it's at the bottom of page 127 when he says, it's four lines up, he says, yet this limitation is not inherent in knowledge itself. Once the temporal order is identified as a construct, it can in principle be differently constructed. And so there's that question. In principle, we can move beneath or beyond or behind or turn inward, and those are some of the examples that that he mentions here. And he says to do that at the top of page 128, we would have to activate a different way of knowing. And that is always the issue, the question, the challenge, and the opportunity. So when Rinpoche starts talking about how to do that, he has this nice phrase, constructing the bridge of time. We've already talked about that, how time is the on across which experience gets carried. The chapter that we're not going to read at all in this section on time and dynamics one of them, is called A Bridge to the Body of Time. So the image gets repeated and gets carried out, and you might want to look at that. But what he points out is that the way we turn our backs on the possibility of a different kind of knowing is that we depend on the authority of the familiar. This is in the first full paragraph on page 128. And he says that what happens then is meaning. You know, we're always concerned with making our experience meaningful. And this is not meaningful in some larger sense. It just means things have to make sense to us. You know, we can't live in a completely chaotic world. Or if we do, we feel like we're going crazy. Things have to make sense to us. And so we construct this story, and we do it on the basis of what we already know to be the case. So he says, at the bottom of that paragraph, he says, meaning is standardized into truth. And then once it's the truth, you know, then, of course, who can challenge it? You know, it's true. So what else is there to say? But if you recognize that it's just a meaning that we've given, then there is the possibility for doing it differently. And the exercise that I suggested people do this for this week is, in one way, a very challenging exercise, in one way, a very easy exercise. I mean, it's easy to understand what's being asked for. It's challenging to do it. But it goes exactly to this point. It says, don't worry about meaning. You know, we're always busy working at the level of meaning, of making sense, of constructing a temporal order, of telling a story. These are all approximately the same point expressed in different terms. And the exercise just says, forget about all that and just focus on the level of time. It's like saying, don't worry about what goes across the bridge. Just be aware of how things are always moving across the bridge. That moving, that dynamic, that is time. So let me ask if anybody found working with that exercise to be helpful or interesting. Nobody wanted to say anything about that? Okay, who found it to be frustrating or difficult or impossible?
Yeah, Jack, I have a question.
Yeah.
Can I ask it?
Of course.
For this exercise, I read, let time become inseparable from your consciousness, so that you are truly in time.
Right.
When I did this exercise, for me, it is only possible for some short moments to have a feeling, now I'm in time, and then it is over. Then I start thinking, imagining, and storytelling, and so. Is this, my feeling is, it is possible only very, very short time to be in time. Would you agree, or
well, of course, everyone's different. But yes, I mean, I said this was a difficult exercise because we are so committed to telling stories and to inhabiting stories and to making sense and assigning meanings. So yes, when you try to drop that, it seems like you only have a little glimpse, and then you find yourself back in the experience. And I think part of what, I mean, back in ordinary experience in which you're busy with all those constructs, right? So I think we've talked a little here about the whole image of conducting time and how you can think about it, think about that word conduct, at least in English, in two different ways. There's a conducting in which you are directing things, you are leading things, and then there's a conducting in which you just let things flow through you, in a sense, in the way that a wire conducts electricity. Right? So if you let things flow through you, that is more this sense of being in time. I guess in that image, you'd have to say time is in you. Or
that one I find easier.
You find that an easier image?
Yes.
Okay.
Easier image. It's a little bit like blood flowing through veins. It just seems experientially easier to access.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, work with that. And other people may want to take that to heart and see how that works for them. But in both cases, I think the way that a shift can get made from the kind of glimpse of turning away from the story or letting go of the story on the one hand and just being totally caught up in the story on the other hand, the way that, you know, the bridge, if I shouldn't use that word because it's confusing, the link between those two is to recognize that even when we're in the middle of the story, the conducting in this more open, flowing way is still going on. And our meaning-giving activity is a part of what's going on. And it's not as though, you know, we give meaning, and then the meaning is there, and now it's safe to enter. You know, it's sort of like if you imagine that the world is being constructed one step at a time. That's kind of the model that we have. You know, it's like we're walking on the edge of a cliff, and in the next moment, the danger is that we're going to fall off the edge of the cliff. So what we have to do is quickly construct a pathway or a bridge that will let us continue to walk forward the next step, and then the next step, and then the next step, and then the next step. So we're always busy with this constructing activity. And in principle, that's not necessarily so bad. What happens, though, is that we construct something, and we have to make sense out of it, or because that is what the construction is assigning meaning or making sense. And then, having made sense, then it's safe to step onto that next step that we've just constructed. And that's what we're always doing. So we always have to make the commitment to the truth of what it is that we constructed before we can step onto it. And that's the way we ordinarily function. What TSK is saying, what this way of talking about it is saying, is that we can move forward knowing that the construction is part of what's going on, but not relying on the truth of it.
Jack?
Yes.
When I was doing the thesis today, and I was just like you described, there was something worrying that I'm going to fall off the edge or something. And then, for whatever reason, immediately I thought of a practice that seeing everything being the deity, hearing anything being the sound of the deity, and whatever thought being the thought of the deity, that put me at ease. And like I let go, I wasn't as if I had a parachute now. And then I entered a whole, as if kind of an ease of allowing without worrying about the next step of the bridge, I'm going to fall off. And I wondered, then of course the thoughts stopped coming and I lost it, that am I doing the practice correctly? And then I thought, oh, maybe if I get a chance, I'll ask Jack if that practice actually is what he's trying to suggest us to do.
Well, that's very interesting. Of course, you're using a Buddhist practice, a Buddhist way of looking at things. So, as you said, to see everything as the deity, as divine, and so on. And yes, that has a lot in common, you might say, with what we're doing, because if we stay with that image, as you did, you can say, we can give up our job. You know, our job is to build this bridge, but if the bridge is already there, then, or if the reality of, you know, the deeper reality that we inhabit, if it's already available to us, then we don't have to worry so much, and we can let go, and we don't have to be afraid of falling off. So yes, that's definitely a way to think about it. And there is actually a famous quote in, I can't remember where now, that says something like, the fact that the ground comes up to meet our feet when we take the next step is through the blessings of the Buddhas and the enlightened lineage. So that is a very different way of looking at things, and it helps us relax that furious need to give meaning all the time. It's not exactly the same as in TSK, though, because in from a TSK perspective, what you would say is there is a level of meaning that you're relying on, and you're saying, this is not a level of meaning that I've constructed. This is a deeper level of meaning. And to be able to go to that deeper level is very important, but it is still not tuning into the constructing activity. And that is where TSK takes us. So from a TSK perspective, one way of talking about that, which I think is accurate, is to say that an image of the world as deity, let's say, is a second-level image. It's second-level time and space and knowledge. And you could analyze it from a Buddhist perspective and, in a sense, come to the same conclusion, but that's not our job here. So yes, I think that gives you, that practice gives you insight into what's being described here as a possibility. As it's not quite the same, though. Okay, well, let's look, because we haven't talked at all about the next chapter. Let's do that for a couple of minutes. In the next chapter, this opening unknown time, Rinpoche starts talking again about the field communique, which is, you know, there are important distinctions, but you could say that the field communique, the temporal order, and what he calls here tempo, are all very closely related. But in this case, he's talking about the field, he's talking about it in terms of the field communique, which always, you know, makes us look at the issue of communication. And then he has this little diagram on page 132, the macrocosm and the microcosm as two separate cones, right? And if you think about the cones for a minute, I'm just going to suggest one thing here. If you say, well, what is this structure? I mean, why draw a cone instead of anything else? Why, you know, why do this? And it's because the point of the cone is the point that we consider to be our present reality. Yeah. So we get to that point of the cone, and he says, when we've arrived at the tip of the cone, we've reached the present. Right? And the reason that it's a cone, you could say, is because that kind of conforms to our ordinary understanding of causality. All these different elements, all these different events that have happened in the past have come together to give us the present. And the way we usually make sense out of that is to talk in terms of causality. And you could talk about causality on the interior level, the microcosm level, or the macrocosm level. So he then says, well, what about everything that's outside the cone? And one thing he doesn't say here, and I was a little surprised when I started thinking about this that he doesn't, is what about what's inside the cone? Well, I guess you could say what's inside the cone is included. Kind of, if you look in Sacred Dimensions of Time and Space, he works a lot with cones. And there he talks a lot about traveling along the surface of the cone. But maybe it's not fair to say that here. You could say we're traveling not only along the surface. Well, he does say surface. Anyway, what's going on inside the cone? I leave that question. I leave that question for you. But what he goes on, what he wants to say then is, says, okay, one way to think about it is what's outside the cone, what's beyond the cone. But then at the bottom of 133, the section that starts there, he says, well, maybe we don't have to go beyond. Okay? And he says, unknown time is available not only beyond the projections of the tempo, the surface of each cone, but within them as well. Well, maybe that's the within that I was wondering about, but he doesn't develop that idea. He says, and then he says something that I think is very much the point. He says, we can go one step further. As projections, that is, the cone not as something that is pre-existing, but as something that is projected. As projections, the projected orders themselves are an ongoing activity of unknown time. So that relates back to the image of conducting that we were talking about before. It relates back to exercise 14, just being in time. It relates back to the image of time as the bridge across which experience and reality get transported. And here he's suggesting that if we tune in to that projecting, to that constructing, and this is another way of talking about a way of a way of engaging the dynamic of time. If we tune into that, then something new opens up. And he says that if we could do that, and this is in the, right in the middle of page 134, he says, if we could invigorate the time beyond conventional time, all sorts of wonderful things could happen. I won't go into them now. But that quality of invigorating, which has to do with, again, the notion that the cone is not just a static structure, but is something that's projected, that's where we... that's where we'd like to go. And how do you do that? Well, you know, we all keep coming back, yeah, but how, what do we do? Well, he gives us a suggestion on page 136 in the second full paragraph when he's talking about the time that is not part of the cone, this unknown time. He says, why call it time at all? Very interesting question. And he says, because if we imagine cleansing relative time of all subjective claims, positions, and needs, there is still the phenomenon of arising. The apparent appears to emerge precisely, perfectly, accurately. So that's the time dimension that he's pointing us towards. And when he talks about cleansing relative time of all subjective claims, positions, and needs, that is where I'm imagining I would like to go in the fall. working with that thought, that possibility. And what that really means is turning to something that we've already worked with in the three quarters that we've had this year, turning to the self. So what I'm expecting to do in the fall is work with something that I actually designed several years ago with the idea of maybe publishing it as a separate book. But it would be a book that was carved out of love of knowledge, that was based on love of knowledge. Really taking the parts of love of knowledge that focus on the self and working with those. And that's what I'm thinking I will do. And it is a very natural outgrowth of where we find ourselves here. We're still looking at this question of how do we, you could say, break out of the temporal order. And the answer suggested here, and of course there are many ways to say this, and whatever you say, it's only words, so that's not the experience anyway. But the way that the words point here is cleansing relative time, that is, cleansing the relative order of all subjective claims, positions, and needs to arrive at this deeper level of time. So that's where I'm imagining we will go, and if you look a little bit beyond what was assigned for this week, but in the same chapter on page 142 in the second full paragraph, he basically suggests something really interesting, which is another inspiration for doing it that way. He says, okay, we want to cleanse relative time of the subjective element, but that doesn't mean turning away from the self. He says in the middle of the paragraph, if we reject the self with its emotions, its claims of identity, and the pain it inflicts in deceiving itself and others, we will close the only gateway through which a founding and conducting knowledge can emerge. To arrive at the prior is like unknown time, we must first inhabit fully our presenting world, whatever its content and obscuring patterns. So that's the inspiration for next quarter, the next program in September or October. But it should also, I hope, be an inspiration for you in terms of how to go forward this whole idea of inhabiting fully the world that we already occupy with a sensitivity to these possibilities that we've been talking about. That's when the TSK vision comes alive. So I hope there's something there for you to work with. It's always hard to come to an end and say, well, here we are, we've come to an end. Of course, it's never just an end. It's an invitation to go further. So thank you very much to everybody for taking part. I always learn a lot from these things.
And thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you so much. Thank
you. Okay.
Will we reach some kind of notification as to when the next quarter is beginning?
Absolutely. And, you know, thanks for mentioning that. I think let's leave open the website. If you want to continue in discussion, and I will check in, but if you want to just among yourselves talk about how you continue with your practice over the summer and how you're digesting what we've been going through and how it's, anything that comes up, basically. The website will stay open and you can continue to post comments there.